The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dr. Rab, what you got, baby? Very good. It is another edition of Dark Side of the Pooch. Every single Monday here on Tony Curry Radio, it runs at noon and 8. First run shows, Dark Side of the Pooch. You can go back and listen to all of the shows on demand through Spotify. Search Tony Curry Radio. That's Tony Curry, Curry, K-U-R-R-E Radio on Spotify. And hear well over 200 different episodes of all of our shows. We have 10 different shows, including Dark Side of the Pooch, brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I went down to Ed's a few days ago, got my Balboa, big fat rat. He has got a full belly. They do all kinds of great exotic pets down there. They have chinchillas, they have rabbits, they have tarantulas, they have all kinds of different snakes, they have beautiful fish, they have caiman, alligator. They got everything down there when it comes to exotic pets, and they promise you not only are you going to get a great experience down there, but also do everything they can to make sure you have a wonderful, pleasurable life with your exotic pet. Plus, Seth is a big toy guy. He goes all over the country looking for collectibles, Star Wars stuff, stuff still in the box, just classic stuff, new stuff as well. If you want to buy, sell, or trade, take it down to Ed's Pet World and see Seth, and they'll set you up at Ed's Pet World. Doc, what's been going on, man? Everything good?
Yeah, everything's good. Have you ever had a chinchilla?
I have never had a chinchilla. My brother actually had a pair of ferrets when I was growing up, and both of them bit me, so I'm not a big ferret guy. I did have a pet skunk once. I had a brown skunk that was obviously de-smelled, or I don't even know what you call that, when you take the smell out. I had a
scent gland.
Yeah, they took the scent gland. I had a skunk for about a week. And then realized it was just nasty. It was just dirty and it stunk really bad, even without its gland in there. What's the strangest pet you ever owned?
I mean, I haven't really had any strange pets, to be honest with you. It's all been pretty standard dogs and cats for me. I never really had any interest in the pocket pets or, you know, the exotic stuff. Yeah. You know, I don't know. It's just, Maybe, don't knock it till you try it. Maybe if I got one of these little guys or girls, it'd turn my world upside down.
There's no doubt. You should try this pocket pets. They're kind of fun and they don't poop a lot. They're pretty easy to clean up too. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. Of course, Rossbridge Animal Hospital's Dr. Rab Stewart joins us every single Monday here live on Tony Curry Radio at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. 208-0301, 208-0301 is their phone number there. This is interesting because my daughter, who's a 10-year-old, who all 10-year-old girls love every type of animal out there. And I have a swing set that's actually on the ground. It's broken, and we lift it up, and it's nice and moist under there. So we see moles, and we see lizards, and we see snakes and all kinds of stuff. But she really was taken aback when she saw a TikTok video last week of a woman who found a fawn in her backyard by itself, and it did not run away. And she assumed the mother was killed by traffic or in the woods or something. And so she took this fawn in, and it still had the white splotches on it, and she hand fed it. Now it's kind of like a pet. She lets it go out in the backyard. It comes back every night and it sleeps at the bottom of her bed. Have you ever heard of a thing?
Your daughter has a pet fawn?
No. My daughter saw a TikTok video of a woman
who found a fawn. TikTok part. I was like, this is breaking news.
No, no. And she wanted one. I said, listen, if you can find a fawn that is motherless, like motherless children from Eric Clapton, you could find one that obviously is, you know, needs to be adopted, I'd be more than happy to take one in and feed it. But this woman, it's been about a year now. It comes in and sleeps at the bottom of her bed. It's a full grown doe. And during the day, it goes outside, and she just hopes it comes back at night.
I had a neighbor when I lived in Haleyville when I was growing up across the street, and he had several pet deer.
Really?
They were in an enclosure. I had really high fences. The fences, I think, were probably at least, I think they were 12 feet high.
Wow.
And it was all natural in there. And I mean, you could see him in there. I mean, this guy lived maybe 200 yards, if that, from me. Like, you couldn't go anywhere without driving past this guy's house. And, you know, it's just, when you grow up with that, you don't think anything about it. It's like, oh yeah, the guy across the street, he's got some pet deer. But then you move away and you realize that there's not this, you know, person that's your neighbor that has, you know, wild animals for pets. So, I have seen it. Now, these were not inside deer. They were outside deer. So that definitely does not surprise me that someone has a pet deer in their house. A few years ago, I was behind my house and, it was in the summer. And there was a newborn fawn that, was kind of hiding out, and the same kind of deal. The mom was nowhere in sight. I didn't really want to get tangled up with it because it's, you know, it's a wild animal and you just don't, you know, domesticated animals are unpredictable enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, okay, I don't want any part of this. So I took a picture of it and I sent it to my wife. That's all I did. But then I kind of got interested to see, you know, if it was hurt or if it was tired or if it was scared or whatever. So I did kind of motion towards it, and that thing jumped up and, I mean, off it went. Really? And I never saw it again.
You know, it's interesting because you bring up a great point. You know, you can take the cheetah out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the cheetah. And I think there's a lot of people that look at a TikTok video of a woman who's actually got a pet deer and it sleeps at the bottom of her bed. It comes in and eats dinner with them and everything else. There's this common misperception that you can domesticate anything. You can to an extent, but again, what is the biggest difference as a veterinarian who's been doing this for years? What is the biggest difference between how we've domesticated? People don't realize that we've domesticated dogs over thousands of years. I mean, all of a sudden dogs just didn't domesticate. It started with Neanderthals and wolves, I guess. But it takes hundreds, if not thousands of years to fully domesticate an animal, and they have to continue to breed and domesticate throughout their breeding. But what is the biggest difference between trying to domesticate perhaps a wild animal and then obviously our dog and cat species?
It's just, they have a, you know, if you're just going to go out and find an animal and try to, domesticate it, you know, it hasn't been socialized, and they've got to be socialized from birth. Yeah. I mean, the moment that they come out of there, which means the adult that they came out of has to be domesticated. It's not like you can just take a wild, you know, a wild animal and, you know, grab its pups and, or, you know, whatever, its offspring, and start raising it, because they have to be around both the parent and you, you know, in order to start that process. And so if you don't have a parent that's domesticated, you're not going to be able to get the offspring domesticated.
Yeah, I've got a couple friends of mine. This is Dr. Rab Stewart, of course, Dark Side of the Pooch. Runs live every Monday at noon and 8. Every Monday is Dark Side of the Pooch Monday here on Tony Curry Radio, and certainly on Spotify. We can go back and listen to like 30 or 40 different episodes that Dr. Rab and I have done. That's brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I had a friend of mine who worked for TEARS, which stands for the Ethical Animal Rescue Service, I think it was. And she would go drive up and down county roads and looking for possums or armadillos that were hit by cars. And she would pull off the side of the road and reach inside, in the marsupials anyway, inside their pouch. And half the time she would find babies that were still alive. And then she would adopt them. She would take them home. And she showed me pictures of possums hanging upside down in her closet off the hangers. And I'm thinking to myself, and I'm like, what do you do with them? And she's like, I keep them until I think they're old enough to go back out in the wild. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, first of all, how long is that? And are you really doing a disservice to this animal? Obviously, if these babies are in a pouch of a possum that's been hit by a car, more than likely they're going to die. So I guess she's doing a good deed there. Another thing is I've seen a lot of people just over the last few years taking on squirrels. I got a lot of friends of mine that got pet squirrels. You ever heard of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a girl that worked for me for a year or so. And she had a pet squirrel.
Yeah, you laugh. It was not a surprise she had a pet squirrel.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, it's just funny. You know, it's like, you know, we love animals. Like, we just, people love animals and we want to care for them. And, you know, to have a, you know, you just think about walking into somebody's house, which I never saw the squirrel, but, you know, you just think about it. Like, what would life be like with a pet squirrel? You know, would it be like a Christmas vacation where it would just like be totally crazy and get into your Christmas tree and start fires and, you know, mess with Uncle Lewis's toupee or, you know, whatever.
I love it. He's Dr. Ab Stewart. Their phone number 205-208-0301, 208-0301, Rossbridge Animal Hospital. They are the best when it comes to pet care. Let's talk about some domestic animals. We got some mutt mail here. Steve in Provo, Utah, first timer for Provo. Steve just got three cats, not one, not two, but three new cats. He adopted all three of them, and he's trying to find the best litter box solution for his three cats. Obviously, he said it's been a little rough around the house, but he says, I will pay $1,000 per litter box just to have a cat know where it needs to go and somehow have it cleaned up so I don't have to reach into there and clean these things. What's the best litter box you've ever seen?
You can get the automated ones that scoop it for you. And you, you know, every now and then you have to do a little bit of maintenance to them. You know, they're only going to be self-cleaning for so long, and then you have to empty them out. So look into that. You want to, if you're going to do that, you want to try to do it soon so they don't get too used to the other, you know, kind of standard non-automated box, because sometimes if you do a lot of switching around, once they get used to something, it can, you know, cause some problems. So the automated one is a good option.
And typically you want to have a litter box for each cat, or does one litter box suffice?
If I'm being honest with you, then what the literature says is you need one litter box per cat, mm-hmm. and then an extra one.
Yeah.
So if we're going by the book, then you'd need four litter boxes for this house.
What's the extra one for?
Well, it's just based on feline behavior, you know, if to try to keep cats happy and not fearful of the litter box or fearful of getting, you know, not hurt, but you know, if a cat wants to kind of terrorize the other cat, as cats do sometimes, you just, you know, you need a little extra space for it. But the feline behaviorist who wrote the book, that's the recommendation. And, you know, I think a lot of people that have one cat adhere to that, you know, one yeah. cat, two litter boxes. And then the more cats you get, I think that I don't think that people really adhere to that because it's not practical for their way their house is set up or whatever, you know. I mean, because these litter boxes, they're not all supposed to be right next to each other either.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, you're supposed to have them spread out through the house. So, you know, I mean, unless you've got a 5-bedroom house, you're going to have a litter box in every bedroom, you know, and that's just not something that a lot of people want to deal with. But he asked the question. So the answer is, if you want to try to avoid as many problems as you can with urinating and defecating outside the box, then it's one litter box per cat plus one.
And what's the thought process behind having litter boxes separated? They won't go if they're together, or is it like feeding dogs where you have to have their bowl separated? What's up with that?
Cats are just, you can spook a cat and they're never the same.
Yeah.
So if you have all four litter boxes in the same room, and there's, I mean, you may never have a problem, but if you do have a problem where one of the cats just wants to mess with the other cat, it'll wait until it goes into that room with all the litter boxes. And then, I mean, it'll just go after it, not try to kill it, but just to mess with it, you know, just to play with it, just to, you know, cause trouble. Cats are spiteful. They can be spiteful.
Yes, they can be.
And so at that point, that cat now has an aversion to that whole room. It's not just the litter box. It's like the cat doesn't want to go in the room, period, anymore. So if you have all four of those litter boxes in that room, the cats then will start peeing and pooping all over the house because it'd rather die than go in that room again.
That is so typical. And James Michael Keats, who's my director of programming, who has three cats, sitting is nodding his head saying he is so spot on. So speaking of cats, and you talk about being traumatized, James called me the other night and said that one of his white cat got spooked and jumped into the fireplace. And obviously there's ashes in the fireplace. It came out and that white cat turned into a black cat. And so they had to bathe it, which turned out to be quite the hellish situation. What's the best way to bathe a cat that's gotten dirty?
If you have an adult cat that you've never bathed, then I would just maybe try to get a damp cloth at first.
Okay.
And try to clean it that way. It's baby steps. And then if the cat doesn't seem to mind that, you know, then maybe you could get, like a cup that has some water in it, put the cat in the sink. But you want to try to make it as, less, you know, the less traumatic, the better. So try to avoid loud noises, you know, turn it on the faucet, you know, mm-hmm. and like high pressure, you know, water that's coming out, high pressure. So just baby steps and see what you can get away with. I mean, some cats tolerate being bathed, but if you don't start it young, then it might be kind of hard.
Yeah. Heather in Columbus, Ohio. This is Mutt Mail. By the way, go to info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. You can leave all your email questions. We get some great questions every single week here for Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital and Dark Side of the Pooch. Heather in Columbus, Ohio. Speaking of cats, lots of cats questions. This particular show here. She said, what's Dr. Rab's thoughts on the humane treatment of animals that are declawed? She's got three cats of her own, and she's thinking they're just tearing the bejeebers out of her apartment, and she's thinking about having them all declawed. What's your thoughts on that?
Try to get the soft paws first. They're like coverings for the nails. They come in little kits, mm-hmm. and there's some glue. So you put the glue in the nail cover, and then you just put the nail cover right over the nail. And that'll keep them from doing a lot of damage. But as the nail grows, the nail cover will pop off. And so you'll have to repeat it. So try that first. And if it just becomes something that you can't keep up with, or if the cats don't tolerate putting those on there,
Is that something that a veterinarian would have to put on, or can you put them on? Because it sounds like if you want to bathe a cat, you certainly want to put press-on nails on your cat.
Yeah, the cat. We have a lot of owners where they do it themselves at home.
Okay.
So, I mean, if it comes to an owner needing us to do it, that means they probably need to be sedated to do it. Okay. Unless it's just out of a convenience thing. You know, they just don't want to do it and the cat's fine and they bring it in and we do it, just like, you know, doing a nail trim. Some people just don't want to do it. They don't feel comfortable doing it. So we do it. But if the cat totally refuses, then it's probably a situation where we need to sedate them to get it done. But if, you know, if that doesn't work, then declawing them for me and for everywhere I've ever worked is an option. Because if, you know, if it's going to affect the longevity of the cat in the household, and it comes to either I'm going to surrender this cat or I'm going to have it, you know, declawed, then in my mind, the, you know, declawing is a fine option.
And I guess if it's an inside cat, I mean, I wouldn't think that'd be that big of an issue. But if you have an outdoor cat or an indoor outdoor cat and it's declawed, it probably is not a particularly good thing for that animal, correct?
Well, they do lose one of their defenses.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're in a, you know, kind of suburban or, you know, rural environment, then it might become an issue, maybe.
All right. You're listening to Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart. He's the man. He owns his own place. How long have you been open out there?
5.5 years.
5.5 years. That's crazy, man. That is insane. Yeah. I cannot believe that. And he is killing it out there, too. The phone number is 205-208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. Check that out. He runs those social media posts. He does a wonderful job. Jonathan in Houston said, Dr. Rab, we love the show every single week. It is stinking hot in Texas. We know about that, Jonathan. It's stinking hot here in Birmingham, too. But he notices, for some reason, that there haven't been nearly as many ticks and fleas and mosquitoes this hot summer. Do critters that certainly could affect our health of our animals, do they lay dormant when it gets super, super hot out there? And how does the flea season stack up to cooler, maybe wetter types of summers?
Fleas, I don't really think they're affected as much as ticks are. Ticks can be affected if it gets really cold. But you know, those type of insects, the heat and the humidity, they thrive. So, you know, I don't know what Houston was like this winter, you know, or I don't know what's happened there in between you know, then in the summer. But sometimes if it gets really cold, the populations of those insects can, you know, be lower as the summer goes on. But those type things really thrive in the heat, but maybe something happened in the winter or in the spring to make it so that they are not as prevalent right now over there.
All right. This is an interesting question too. It's a great question because obviously if you've been to an airport the last 3 or 4 weeks, you realize that it's a kind of a conundrum there too with all the canceled flights, but it's certainly a conundrum if you travel with your pets. Stacy in Alice Beach says she's going up to the Northeast a little bit later on in August and wants to travel with her two dogs, but she can't decide whether she wants to put them in the stowaway area. They're small enough. They can actually go on board, but she's going to have to pay for those animals, or does she want to fly them down with the luggage? What is the best way to go with your animals? And obviously anxiety probably plays into this, but what do you do when you travel with your little pooches?
I don't think I would feel comfortable if I could avoid, if I could avoid putting them anywhere else other than with me, that's what I would do. I don't know that I would feel comfortable putting them, you know, in a cargo area. And I know that I've never traveled with a pet. But I do think that they have a separate area that's, you know, climate controlled for pets. It's not like they just, you know, throw them down there with the luggage where it's hot and all that kind of stuff. So, but from a, you know, I just kind of worry that they're going to be worried and scared and that sort of thing. So I would do everything I could to keep them next to me. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely an added expense, but one that could probably save you a lot of headache.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I don't think you have to pay like regular fare for an animal, particularly if it's a lap dog or something you can hold in your lap. I wouldn't think that'd be an issue. And I know some people have actually traveled with cats too. But yeah, it's gotten to the point now where, you know, there's so much anxiety after COVID for both animals and humans because animals are used to having us around a lot more. And now they don't because we're all heading back to work. And I can certainly see where we maybe have an epidemic of depression, anxiety affecting our animals, couldn't we?
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's been an uptick in that because some of these dogs that are now, you know, getting close to 2 years old for at least the first year, maybe even longer of their life, they had constant companionship. And now that's not the case. So I think that we'll learn a lot in the next, you know, over the next year.
You're listening to Dark Side of the Pooch every Monday. He owns the radio station, man. Tony Curry Radio is Dark Side of the Pooch Monday, every Monday at noon and 8 of fresh new shows every single week. And then if you want to go back and listen to all the other shows, because everyone listens to the show fresh and they're like, these are great. And then they go to Spotify and they start listening to all the other Dark Side of the Pooches. Go to Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K. Tony Curry Radio on Spotify and listen to all of our shows. And we have 10 different shows, everything from Blues Almighty to the Damon Johnson Show to Win in Rome with Stuart Rome. We have Mission Minded. We have Adapter Pair. We have Dark Side of the Pooch, fantastic shows, Livewire Wednesday. Check them all out on Spotify. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World, 879-1331, 879-1331. You can check out Ed's Pet World. They're fantastic for all your exotic pets and for all your toys. Seth is about 50-50 now on toys and pets. He gets it done there at Ed's Pet World in beautiful Homewood. Ben in St. Paul's, this is an interesting question too. And he just got himself an adopted dog, and someone had mentioned that this particular breed, it doesn't say what breed it is, but most of these breeds have short tails. He's like, I am not cutting the tail off this particular dog of mine. He wants to know the history of why dogs have their tails cut off. When's the best time to do that? Can you do it later on in life and so forth and so on? What's the history of cutting dogs' tails?
I think that it's just been so breed specific over the years. I think that, I mean, one answer is that some of these dogs that have docked tails, they had a purpose in life. Maybe they were hunters of, you know, big game or rodents or, you know, whatever. And so their tails caused them to get hung up in thick brush.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So they got rid of them. German short-haired pointers, you know, they have their tails docked, Weimaraners, Vizslas, and those are all hunting dogs. You know, that's why they had theirs done. But then you also have these really small breed dogs like Yorkies. It's breed standard for them to have their tail docks and Corgis. And so I think somewhere along the way, they had a job too, and their tail got in the way of that job. And because of the breed standard, that has just carried on, even though they don't have those jobs anymore. You want to dock their tail within the first 3 or 4 days of their life, because they, I liken it to male circumcision.
Yes.
You know, when you're younger, you know, you don't, number one, you don't really remember. Number two, you know, these bones that, because I mean, there's vertebrae in the tail, but they're not as hard. The growth plates are open. So, I mean, it really is just a very simple, you place a clamp, you make the incision, you put a couple of stitches in. I mean, we don't even sedate them. That's why I tell people, you know, it's a little bit like circumcision. They're never going to remember it. You know, you don't have to worry about it. So you don't want to do it when they're older, unless there's a medical reason behind it. We amputate tails because they may have a tumor. Sometimes they do have trauma. And so that just gives you some insight as to why they were docked the first time. But, you know, tails get caught indoors. That's probably the number one thing, especially with cats. And so if they fracture their, vertebrae there, then some of the nerves are damaged as well. And the tail, it has no function and they can't lift it up. So they end up pooping on it, you know, and it needs to go.
There you go.
So there's a couple of reasons where we would amputate them as an adult, but they're all medical reasons and not something that you want to do in an adult dog, because it is, at that point, it is painful. It is a much bigger deal. It's, you know, it's an actual surgery with general anesthesia and all that stuff.
All right, let's get off pets for a few minutes. I know since the last time we spoke, you went and saw the Dan Band, doing a show over there at Chastain Park. And, you sent me, a notepad. Were those notes you actually took during the show?
They were. Yeah.
I think that's amazing. I don't know anyone that keeps notes during a show, but to remember what happened during the show, and obviously you're not a heavy drinker, but I think that's a great idea. So you've done the widespread panic thing. You've done Steely Dan. I don't know if you saw this. The night before his 80th birthday, Paul McCartney played MetLife Stadium, and on stage with him was Bruce Springsteen and John Bon Jovi. No one knew they were going to show up. So the three of them played a couple songs together, which I think is fantastic, Beatles songs. But what's your next summer show you're going to be doing?
The next thing that I have tickets to is, it's not exactly I guess in some circles it would be classic rock, but, Dinosaur Jr. is coming to Saturn, and they were already supposed to have been here, but the COVID thing, made them reschedule. So, you know, Dinosaur Jr. is a really, kind of cult indie influential band. I think they started in actually the late 80s. But you know, they're one of my favorite bands like that. So I'm going to go see them. But Steely Dan, I mean, my only complaint with that show was that it was too short, because I feel like every one of their songs is a hit, and I could have sat there for 4 hours. I see a lot of Fish shows, but there are people in the audience that just take incredibly extensive notes.
Yeah.
So if I ever want to go back and figure out, you know, well, what did they do here or there, I can just go to a certain website and look. But, you know, Steely Dan doesn't have that. And so I wanted to just try to, you know, remember every detail as much as I could remember, because you can't tape those shows.
Yeah.
It's not like you can go back and listen to them later, like you can Fish. And to me, this was once in a lifetime, because I don't know how much longer Donald's going to do this.
Yeah.
Maybe my one and only shot to see him.
What's amazing too, is when Walter and Donald, obviously back in the '70s, they would not tour and they didn't want to tour. They were just, and they just had studio guys playing, studio session players playing on all their records. And of course those guys didn't make anything because they wrote all the music. And now, thank goodness, over the last 25 years, it's all they've wanted to do is go tour, which, obviously to the joy of Steely Dan fans everywhere. And I did mention this, and I think you probably already know this, but Michael McDonald, of course, was supposed to join the Doobie Brothers about 2 or 3 years ago for their either 40th or 50th anniversary tour. And they're going to be coming to Oak Mountain Amphitheater coming up later on in September. That's one of those things where I've always wanted to see. I've seen the Doobie Brothers a million times. I've never seen Michael sing with the Doobie Brothers. So that's another big show that perhaps you and I will have to clink a glass and run into each other. All right, my brother, wonderful stuff. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Ed's Pet World, they do all kinds of exotic pets. And of course, they give you all the care, convenience, everything you need to know to make sure that exotic pet will live a long and healthy life at Ed's Pet World right there in Homewood. They're redoing the streets over there, so you got plenty of parking down there now. And, of course, Seth, a very good friend of mine and proud sponsor here of Dark Side of Pooch, also does toys. He travels the entire United States of America looking for great collectibles in the box, watches. They do all kinds of great vintage stuff, the new stuff, Star Wars, you name it, they've got it for you. So look for your wonderful toys down there, your collectible toys. And if you want to buy, sell, or trade, they'll do that as well at Ed's Pet World. Dr. Rad, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week, brother.
See you next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.